chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, and no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass may have in the middle of it. Grass may have in the middle. We are grass may have.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off with an interview that Alex Jones had with Matt Bracken, and they're discussing the impeachment, and then we're going to pick up on a controversy that occurred this last day, this Friday, between Chief Justice and Rand Paul. But we'll go from there. Listen to this interview first between Alex Jones and Matt Bracken. Here we go now.
Matt, so where do you see it going? What do you think is going to happen?
I think it's a really great sign that it ended with disunity by Nadler and Schiff. You know, and you can tell that Nadler was trying to rein it in because he had blown it so badly in his last closing argument when he, you know, was accusing the senators of treason that they didn't call for witnesses. I think that a real wild card in this is Romney, because Romney is not his own man. Romney is a CIA stooge. You know, they put him in. He's run by a guy named Kofor Black, who is a, you know, close confidant of Brennan, who is actually still running the CIA from the outside. The top three at the CIA are all Brennan mentees, acolytes. He is still, you know, people are still hoping if they can get rid of Trump or vote him out, the old order comes back in. We have to understand about the CIA. You're never ex-CIA at that level. So Kofor Black is sort of the Rasputin of Mitt Romney. So whatever Kofor Black and John Brennan tell Mitt Romney to do, that's what he's going to do. So he could actually flip the vote either way. He's not an ideological person like Collins. She's confused and she's, you know, a dingbat. But Mitt Romney is going to strictly follow orders, and we don't know how he's going to fall down. Then the next thing is, if it is a 50-50 tie, and in this era, I mean, it always looks like, hey, we're on the cusp of amazing things. If it's a 50-50 tie, then Roberts, he's the one that he flipped on Obamacare. He's another wild card. I think he's under blackmail control. And if it looks like it'll benefit the deep state to call witnesses, they will. And if they're going to cut their losses because they're afraid that if they do call witnesses, this can drag out for months and turn into, you know, Eric Ciaramella being interviewed, Sean Misko, Abby Grace, both Vindman brothers. You know, this is a plot that's clearly hatched up in the National Security Council by the Obama holdovers. So, you know, if all of these people are called in to testify and they have to take the fifth, then the Republican lawyers are going to just lay out the conspiracy around them. You know, if they take the fifth, that'll look terrible.
I've been trying to get a straight answer on this. How long until we find out if they're going to have that vote and whether he's going to get acquitted today or whether they're going to drag this into next week?
I think it's going to go till tonight. Also, just for a moment, I, if you can indulge me, I want to give a shout out to the Appalachian Battalion of the Mossy Oak Militia. And, this is our secret, one of our secret ritual recognition signs right here. Okay. You get a picture of that.
Okay.
This is the Mossy Oak Militia. Okay. Anyway, I happen to be wearing this today. So anyway, it's kind of an inside joke among, people that like to shoot in the woods.
I understand.
But yeah, anyway, haven't been doing an awful lot lately, but pretty much, you know, enough. I got the brass all over the table and, you know, reloading. But anyway, the vote comes tonight, and it's a poker game. And, you know, Justice Roberts is one of the potential kingmakers if it's a 50-50. And whichever way the deep state tells him to go, that's the way he's going to go.
Well, it's certainly a big day today, and we're going to be watching it all. In fact, I'll probably just end up staying up here late tonight and doing a special broadcast if I get the crew in here, because this is history happening right now. We're going to go to break here in a few minutes and come back and talk about this virus and why we've seen this unprecedented response. I know you want to get into the technicals of how dangerous it could be during a lockdown or similar things here, and how riots would probably break out in many cities. That's all been pre-programmed by the media and the culture. But from your own research, do you think it's man-made? Do you think it escaped from a lab? Do you think it's a natural mutation? Why is it being hyped up? I mean, gut level, what do you think this virus is?
I think it, at a huge pandemic like this today, it almost is a moot point whether it's natural or man-made, because we'll never really know the truth. There's never going to be a record that comes out that everybody believes. You know, there's always going to be, theories that are competing. So I would say, sure, it could be snake to bat to man, or it could be, the Canadian bio, research lab to Wuhan bio chem lab or research lab, and then it gets out. You know, it infects somebody in the lab and they go home and it gets out that way. But I don't think we'll ever know definitively, unless there is a chance if they take this virus apart and they can see that there are spliced in sections that are absolutely impossible to have occurred in nature, you know, kind of like a Frankenstein virus, then we might know. But that's way down the road.
But the problem is, the very same groups that are doing the testing are groups that have called for population control and have been caught in secret experimentation before. We're going to look at every angle of it. The UN has said it's a global emergency, but doesn't want travel restricted. But most countries are restricting travel. So why hasn't Trump done that yet? We'll answer that question as best we can on the other side. It's Friday. We're live. Stay with us.
That was early in the day, Friday. But on Friday, they were still taking questions. And Rand Paul got up and submitted a question, to the Chief Justice. And let me play that clip of that submission of that question. It wasn't read out loud. But here's what the Chief Justice did to Rand Paul's questions. Here we go now.
Thank you, Ms. Manager.
Mr. Chief Justice,
Senator from Kentucky,
I have a question to present to the desk for the House Manager Schiff and for the President's Counsel.
Thank you.
The presiding officer declines to read the question as submitted.
Follows is a interview that Rand Paul had with Fox News. And what Rand had submitted was a question about three or four people in the White House, one being the whistleblower, but he didn't name him as a whistleblower, but he included that name with other people that had been talking and possibly plotting together. And he was asking the House, managers, and our side, what they knew about this possible collusion of these three people together that colluded together and possibly planned this whole, you could say, impeachment, farce and way in advance. But here we go with this interview with Rand Paul.
Joining us now is Senator Rand Paul. Senator, thank you. Good to have you here this evening.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Obviously, you asked a question today that was shut down by Chief Justice Roberts. Anybody who wants to hear the whole text of that question and the names that you included, it's on your Twitter feed, and you talked about it today, and I would direct them there. But I'd ask you not to say them here. And I would love to know what you wanted to get out of the question and why you feel it's so important to focus on the origins of this investigation and to bring that point home.
You know, my question did not identify anyone as a whistleblower or refer to anyone as a whistleblower, but my question did discuss two Obama partisans who worked in the National Security Council. One of them now works for Adam Schiff, and one of them is someone who is involved in the origins of the impeachment inquiry. So these two people have been friends for a long time. There are stories and reports now that they, a few years ago, were overheard saying, you know what, we got to do everything we can to bring down the president, to take down the president. And lo and behold, these two friends are still intimately involved. And the story even thickens from there. There are three people working for Adam Schiff's staff who used to work for the National Security Staff. They know this third gentleman. They all know Vindman. You know, Vindman's been very prominent in the testimony, mm-hmm. and Vindman's brother. So we actually have six people who were Obama partisans who work for the National Security Council who all are transmitting stuff back and forth. And my question is, did they have discussions predating the official impeachment inquiry, maybe predating even by a year or two? We know that Adam Schiff was dishonest when he said there was no contact. It turns out they did have contact in the days and weeks leading up to the impeachment inquiry, but it may well be that they had contact even a year or two before, and I think people ought to be able to discuss that. So I was disappointed that that question was shut down.
Well, I think that, you know, the question of the origin of this investigation, just like the questions of the origin of the Russia investigation, are certainly valid questions to ask. One of the problems I think that's frustrating for people watching all of this is that there's really no forum here. There's no cross-examination. I mean, you know, even if your question had been asked, you know, what would be the best you could have hoped for in terms of what would happen when Adam Schiff got up and tried to answer it?
Well, Adam Schiff's not really answering questions. So you would actually have to have him in a deposition under oath. And that's why if people want to have witnesses, Adam Schiff's going to have to be a witness. But so is Sean Misko, who's on his staff, and maybe several other people on his staff, because they need to be asked, were they coaching and helping this complaint, not only in the days preceding the impeachment complaint, but maybe even weeks and months before? Were they simply looking and waiting for some kind of bit of evidence that they could create and craft into an impeachment complaint? And that's not the way the whistleblower statute was meant to be. It wasn't meant to be some sort of blanket immunity from knowledge. But one of the telling questions, you know, we've had hundreds of hours of testimony now, but Senator Burr asked today, he said, well, would it be impeachable to hire a foreign spy from Britain to get a dossier on someone like what happened to President Trump? Because they're now saying a lot of things are impeachable, and that's the problem with having this low level or low standard for impeachment, is that, you know, I had a lot of policy disagreements with President Obama, but I didn't call to impeach him. And that's the problem, is if we lower the standard and dumb it down, everybody's going to impeach everybody, and it's going to be a disaster for our country.
All right, so but there are other ways, and the name that you mentioned is one of the people that you mentioned in your tweet before, and he is still currently working for he's on the staff still, correct?
Yeah, Sean Misko's sitting there. He's in the Senate chamber with two other people.
There's nothing secret about that. But let me ask you, you know, when for people who, because I, you know, just looking at your Twitter feed today, you know, about half of the people who respond think that you should be arrested. They think that you're a communist and working for the Russian government. The other half think you're a hero, which is not atypical for the responses that you sometimes get, because you do put yourself out there on these issues. But how, you know, for anybody at home who says, yeah, I'd like to know the answer to these questions, why doesn't the Senate Judiciary Committee or the DOJ, someone start to look into this, just as we saw happen with the origins of the Russia investigation? Is that going to happen?
Well, maybe eventually. But see, I think what we've done is we've overblown this sort of idea of whistleblower protection. Look, I am a big defender of whistleblowers. Eric Snowden, probably the biggest, Edward Snowden, probably the biggest whistleblower of all time. But many people want to put him in jail and kill him, even though he's a whistleblower. He revealed something we were doing unconstitutional, and then our government actually changed. We actually passed laws because we were so worried about what he revealed. And yet a lot of people have mixed feelings about it. Same way with this whistleblower. If this was a concocted plot to bring down the president, that's not something the whistleblower statute is about. But also the whistleblower statute doesn't guarantee that you're anonymous. It guarantees that you're not fired. So I don't want to fire the whistleblower. But I think the president deserves that this whistleblower come forward. And I never identified anybody as a whistleblower. That's why it's unfair to exclude my question.
Right.
I'm just identifying people who are friends and who are against the president and plotted against the president.
I'm about to talk to Senator Van Hollen, and this is something that he said earlier today, and so I want to give you a chance to respond to what he said, because he's going to, you know, I'm sure, build on that in a moment. He says, this is absolutely repugnant. Doing this would send a statement to any future whistleblower. If you use legal channels to expose abuses of power, you will be retaliated against. We live in a democracy, not an autocratic state. What do you say to that, Senator?
You know, I think we're on different wavelengths here. We see what the Clintons did in purchasing foreign information to go after President Trump as being awful. The fake FISA warrants, all of the FBI lying 17 times. I think all of that was a great abuse of power. And the great irony of this entire impeachment hearing now is they're using government to go after their political opponents. They're mad that they say President Trump did it. They're doing exactly the same thing in a very partisan way, which every one of them said during the Clinton impeachment was a problem. They're now doing exactly the same thing. So hypocrisy's, you know, if the shoe fits, wear it. But they're hypocritical on all this.
Last question. Did you think there was anything wrong with the phone call? Did you see it as a request for a political favor in the coming election against somebody who's likely running against the president?
The original legislation that we gave money to Ukraine said that the president has to investigate corruption. And so I think there's a lot of evidence that the Bidens are corrupt and that there was corruption. So he would actually be going against the law if he didn't investigate the Bidens. So I think what he did was completely within compliance of the law. And this is just a partisanship thing gone amok. And ultimately the Democrats are going to regret they did this because they're making it very, very hard for the country to have anything that we can do together. It's very polarized. It's divisive. If anybody has seen it, and I think it's a big mistake for them to do it.
Senator, thank you. Good to see you tonight.
Thank you.
Senator Paul.
Thank you.
What happened later was that they eventually had a vote concerning whether or not to allow witnesses or not. And what finally came out of that vote, it was a 51-49 not to allow witnesses. So that closed down the Democrats expanding this impeachment for many more weeks or months. And so they were very disappointed and very bitter about it, and they kept expressing the idea that this was illegitimate trial and that they should have had witnesses and so forth. Now, here's a couple of here's some opinions that were expressed about Adam Schiff. And one by Senator out of Florida and then another one. But anyway, I'm going to play those to give you straight from the horse's mouth what many of the people in the Senate now and bystanders and observers, commentators are beginning to express outward what they think about Adam Schiff. Here we go now.
Florida Republican Senator Rick Scott joins us live. Senator, good morning.
Good morning. Aren't you tired? I mean, this has gone on forever. I mean, we spent, 8 hours yesterday doing Q&A. Nothing, there's nothing new. We just get to hear Adam Schiff lie and rant and stuff like that, ask for more witnesses when it was actually his job. Mm-hmm. And he decided not to do it.
Well, Senator, when you say there's nothing new, obviously Democrats would push back and say, let's hear from John Bolton. Let's see if what he said in that videotape last August, where he said the phone call sounded like he was almost saying it was perfect or cordial, went very well, as the president has suggested with the Ukrainian president, or what he says in his book is true. Why not bring him in, hear something new, and settle this once and for all?
Well, first off, it'll never end. But they had a chance. The Democrats in the House had the chance to subpoena John Bolton. They are the ones that decided not to subpoena John Bolton. They're the ones that have decided to rush this case through, and then they said, oh, now we want you to go through the process of calling John Bolton. They could have done it, and they didn't do it. I think we've all heard enough. I believe people are tired. I think both Republicans and Democrats are tired of this. I can tell you what they want back home. They want us to get back to work. They want the border secure. They want a military budget. They want a balanced budget. They want stuff like that. They don't want to get rid of a president 9 months before mm-hmm. an election. There's an election coming up. Wait, go to the election.
So, Senator, on that point, you're running an ad right now in Iowa, as I understand it. I've taken a look at it on social media. It's sort of, you add a little humor to this process, perhaps, saying you've been stuck in Washington, choice of either drinking milk or water. And it's sort of an ad hitting Joe Biden over all of this and the ties that his son had to Burisma and whatnot. What's the point of the ad? What are you trying to say?
I'm sick and tired of what the Democrats are saying. They say, Joe Biden, sitting vice president, it's okay for him to go get a prosecutor fired to hold up federal money. This prosecutor was investigating a company where Hunter Biden was getting paid $83,000 a month. Mm-hmm. That's okay. But the president getting rid of an ambassador that he has a right to do for any reason, there has to be something sinister there. So I put the ad up. There's, you know, we got the Iowa caucuses. I hope everybody starts talking about what Joe Biden did, because that's what, there's a cover up here for Joe Biden. That's what this is.
On the flip side of that, we played a clip a short time ago from Alan Dershowitz, who seemed to be saying, well, look, if any president of either party does something that they believe is in the interest of their reelection, that's okay. It shouldn't be impeachable. He's been trying, Alan Dershowitz, to sort of clarify what he meant. But well, your Democratic colleague, Mark Warner, pounced on that and said you have a problem. Watch.
I cannot imagine there would be any Republican senator on the Intelligence Committee that would endorse the President's counsel's position that foreign interference, as long as it doesn't meet Bill Barr's contribution definition under this DOJ, is totally okay. That is not our policy. It is dangerous.
So, Senator, you made the case a moment ago that you believe the Bidens should be investigated. Let's turn it
Absolutely.
Around on you and say, hang on there. When Alan Dershowitz is saying, look, if the president does something in his reelection interest, it's okay. Answer Mark Warner's question about whether you're letting the president off the hook.
Well, think about it. When you get elected, you say you're going to do certain things. Now, if you go hustle to do all those things, is that impeachable? I mean, what do you think people are supposed to do? If you're sitting in office, you're going to do the things you said you're going to do. Is that because you did that? Is that impeachable? And by the way, Joe Biden, who thinks we're stupid enough to believe that Joe Biden should be able to get a prosecutor fired and his son get paid $83,000 a month and everybody should be okay with that? There is nothing sinister about this. This is them trying to cover up and help Joe Biden. That's all this is.
So,
and then, I mean, this is partisan stuff. Adam Schiff is a complete liar, by the way. I mean, he didn't present all the facts in this case. He should have presented all the facts.
Senator, you've been fired up from the very beginning of this interview saying you're tired, you want to move on, you think Adam Schiff is a liar. So where does this end? Are we headed now for no witnesses and a vote as early as tomorrow on acquittal or conviction?
I think everybody's tired. I think everybody's come to the conclusion this was the House's job. If whoever we pick to come, talk, we'll never stop. We'll never get back to doing something. We'll spend the whole year. And there's an election in 9 months. And remember what they're trying to do. They're trying to impeach a president over what he thought he wanted to do. Because he didn't do it. He didn't hold up the money. The money got there on time. They got their meeting. Zelensky got his meeting. It's just like, this is like a parallel universe. It just doesn't make any sense what they're doing right now. And it's all partisan.
All right. Senator Rick Scott, speaking his mind today. We appreciate you coming in, sir.
Have a good day.
Coming up next will be Newt Gingrich expressing his views about the impeachment and Adam Schiff and others. But one thing that Rand Paul would have been able to do, getting back to the question that was refused by the Chief Justice to be read, is that he could have objected to that and forced a vote right then by the Senate and overturned that decision by the Chief Justice with a majority vote. And they usually could vote 51-49 or 53-47 at least. So he could have done that, possibly, but he said later in interviews that he didn't quite, think about that at the time. And he was taken back because the question was rejected and not read by the Chief Justice. And that was really way out of line by the Chief Justice. Well, anyway, we've got Newt Gingrich with an interview and some of his thoughts about what happened on Friday and his opinions, again, about Adam Schiff and so forth. Here we go with Newt Gingrich.
And since Democrats' case for impeachment it's always been weak. We've laid it out for you for months what they were going to try to do. We predicted a lot along the way. Well, they've had to substitute actual evidence with lies, smears, and made-up Putin conversations. Well, now they have another one.
The argument put forward by the president's lawyers yesterday is a King Trump defense.
I mean, that's what kings do. That's not what presidents do.
It elevates the presidency to a place that we as Americans do not want our presidents to be, and that is in this sort of hierarchy, this kingship.
Down with the king. Well, I don't remember them fretting over the checks and balances under Obama, even after he said this.
I'm also going to act on my own if Congress is deadlocked. I've got a pen to take executive actions where Congress won't, and I've got a telephone to rally folks around the country on this mission.
Obama pen and phoned his way through DACA and costly climate policies. Joining me now is Newt Gingrich, former Speaker of the House, Fox News contributor, and host of Newt's World podcast. All right, Newt, the Democrats' about-face on executive power and how it should be used is quite something to behold tonight.
Look, I think there's a very easy model here. Whatever Trump does, they oppose. They have no historic memory. They're so fascinated by Trump that he erases anything they might have said in the past. But I think you put your finger a minute ago on probably the key test for the Democrats that will define them for the rest of this year up to the election. That is, let's say Friday or Saturday that this is over, that the Senate has acquitted the president, he's innocent, all of the lies and things told by Schiff have collapsed. They've got to decide next week at the State of the Union. Do they want to work with this president for the rest of the year? Or do they want to continue this kind of unending hostility? And the country, I think, having gotten very tired by every poll I've seen, really doesn't want to see more bickering. So the burden is going to be on the Democrats, having done everything they could for 3 years to destroy President Trump, having failed. Do they continue for the next 8 or 10 months to try to investigate, attack, smear, whatever? Or do they say, okay, let's get a couple things done before the election to prove that we're a party that can be positive? And I think next Tuesday night at the State of the Union is going to be a very important moment. And the attitude that Pelosi and Schumer take into this is really important. I mean, they better extend an olive leaf and decide they're going to find a way to work together.
Or I don't think so.
The country will decide that, well, the country will then decide that they're pathological. What they're dealing with is a psychological condition.
Yeah, well, Newt, speaking of pathological, I keep referring to this, but we have the soundbite now. This is Adam Schiff. After he made up that transcript that got him into so much trouble, he said it was a joke. Tonight, he made up a conversation that the president could have had with Vladimir Putin. Watch.
If the president went further and said to Putin in that secret meeting, I want you to hack Burisma. I couldn't get the Ukrainians to do it. And I'll tell you what. If you hack Burisma and you get me some good stuff, then I'm going to stop sending money to Ukraine.
The man is, I mean, it is a pathological, it's a reflexive Pavlovian response to Trump. You have to just make stuff up. You can't argue the case. You have to make it up.
Look, but I think also a comment on Schiff. I mean, Schiff personally is obviously a deranged human being. This is about Schiff. You know, Schiff is a guy who's a pathological liar. He seems to have no ability to distinguish between the truth and falsehood. He lied for 2.5 years about the Russian collusion. It all disintegrated. He looked like a fool. He learned nothing. He came back and lied again and again. And you're right. Here we are at the end of this cycle, and he goes back and decides to lie again. I mean, I think somehow people have got to decide that Adam Schiff is a compulsive, uncontrollable liar, should be dealt with that way. Listen, a healthy House would strip him of the Intelligence Committee. I mean, how could you ever expect the president and the CIA and others to share secrets with a person who's this profoundly publicly dishonest? And I think this is a Schiff problem that we've learned over the last few months. This guy literally is a pathological liar.
Well, this permeates the media as well, Newt, because it was one MSNBC guest who floated this conspiracy theory about what Trump's acquittal would actually mean.
Imagine Donald Trump deciding sometime in June, well, I heard this conspiracy theory that a whole lot of illegal immigrants voted in California. We're going to shut down voting in a state. This is literally the kind of thing he will do now. This is step one to actual autocracy. But an actual president who will say, this state's votes don't count. These people don't have a right to vote. These people can't come into the country. That is what they're allowing to happen here.
Aside from his incorrect use of the word literally, Newt, isn't it ludicrous comments like this that are driving people to the president's side? I mean,
of course. But what's happening is all through this entire impeachment process, Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Senate, and Donald Trump have collaborated. I think they're up now to 187 judges who've been approved. Almost one out of every four federal judges now is a Donald Trump judge. So if you're a liberal, excuse me, you're watching a nightmare. This is like watching a Godzilla movie, and you're watching your entire system being destroyed. I mean, judges were supposed to be left wingers who imposed on people like you and me the correct values. All of that's now disappearing.
Well, Hakeem Jeffries today was basically trying to distinguish poor Newt. I want to pass you a lozenge right over the television screen. Yeah. I've been there. I know what it is. But it was basically saying the Steele dossier, that's, you know, digging up dirt on your opponent, a foreign source doing that. And what happened here are two different things. Try to distinguish. Watch.
The analogy is not applicable to the present situation because, first, to the extent that opposition research was obtained, it was opposition research that was purchased.
It was paid for, Newt. That's the difference. What?
Now, look, the difference between the Steele dossier and Adam Schiff is the Steele dossier was more believable. Excuse me. That's the real difference here is nothing Schiff does in a factual world would be taken seriously.
Well, we have Maisie Hirono saying that we're witnessing the coronation of Donald Trump. And then we have Barbara Lee saying we're on the verge of a dictatorship, Newt. So they've gone from coronation to all-out dictatorship. Then it'll be martial law. Tomorrow it'll be martial law. This is the level of argument and skill on the part of the Democrats. No wonder they're not convincing anyone of their obscene point of view.
But I think, Laura, I think what you're seeing is a movement and a party that are in total panic mode because Trump literally is beginning to dismantle their world and beginning to move back America back to a more stable, a more solid, a more conservative constitutional framework. And if you're on the hard left, this is terrifying.
Well, it's like what the Remainers must be feeling like in Britain tonight with Brexit finally slowly happening. All right, we're going to let Newt, you know, go pick up the lung that dropped on the floor just there. I'm just kidding, Newt.
Newt is saying it like it is now. Anyway, Mike Johnson's going to come up and tell us what's going to occur between now and Wednesday. And I think there will be a final vote on Wednesday of this next week at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So Mike Johnson's coming up right now to let us know what's going to occur between now and then. Here we go now with Mike Johnson.
Well, the president's impeachment trial is winding down, finally. Senators have rejected any additional witnesses, but a final vote to acquit the president may have to wait until next week, Wednesday, we're hearing tonight. Congressman Mike Johnson represents Louisiana and is on the president's defense team. We're happy to have him in the studio tonight. Congressman, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Tucker.
So what remains to be done? Why wait till Wednesday?
What remains to be done is the senators want to give speeches, so they have to allow a couple days for that. Monday they come back for closing arguments. There's 4 hours allotted. I don't think all that time. As you know, the defense side, our side, has not been using all the time because you don't have to run the clock out when you have the facts and the law on your side. Tuesday they have some speeches that they can go in and pontificate for a while, and then Wednesday we finally get the vote to acquit.
So this is really more a TV question than a political question, but do we have to pretend it's significant until then, or can we just ignore it?
We can, and most of the American public is. No one's been watching this for the last few days because it's so dreadfully boring.
Yeah.
They've regenerated the same arguments over and over and over, and it's frankly been painful to watch. I'll tip my hat to the senators who've been able to stay awake somehow for all this. But as you've been saying in the last couple of segments, this was decided a long time ago. We all knew the outcome, and the sooner we get there, the better.
What do you think the outcome, as a numbers matter, is likely to be? Do you think you'll see any Republicans defect? Will any Democrats cross over?
I believe and we expect it'll be a bipartisan acquittal. I think we'll get at least two, maybe three Democrats. And I think they're going to take a lot of heat over the weekend of people trying to twist their arms. But I think they're going to do the right thing.
There are Republican senators who would clearly like to convict and expel the president. Mitt Romney obviously would like to do that. Will they dare, do you think?
He can't. There's no way. He has to vote to acquit. I mean, look, if you look at this objectively, as we've proven, I think, very well, these are not impeachable offenses. There was no, right. There was nothing here. There's no treason, bribery, high crime, misdemeanor. So they really don't have a choice. It doesn't matter how much they dislike Donald Trump. You can't kick him out of office. You can't undo the results of the last election as hard as they've tried.
Huh. You think this will happen again?
I do. Look, they committed to take him out. And our Democrat colleagues, unfortunately, probably a majority of them, have committed to do it again. So I don't think this ends. And it's a sad and unfortunate chapter in U.S. history. And I'm not sure how we get out of it.
It's pretty much the one thing I never thought would become standard operating procedure.
No, and they've opened the Pandora's box, as we've talked about. They've weaponized impeachment. So we're in for a long and dark road, I'm afraid.
Depressing. Well, luckily, your job as a member of the defense team will end soon, so congrats on that. Congressman, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Now we have in the Senate and in the Democratic Party very bitter people, and they've already started putting forward on many levels, Nancy Pelosi and others, that this is not a legitimate, because they didn't get their witnesses, this is not a legitimate trial. So that's what they're going to come back with, and they'll use that all the way to the national election. But anyway, this is a good interview here about some of these people clinging on to this very bitter, the bitterness there in the Democratic Party.
Now, remember when Obama described us conservatives as bitter people clinging to our guns and our religion? Well, now we see who the real bitter clingers really are. Schiff, Schumer, Nadler, Pelosi, Romney, Bolton, just to name a few. Well, all of them, when you think about it, in their own way, are very angry people. They cling reflexively to an ideology that most people just don't relate to anymore. Now, the Democrats have become increasingly rabid and radical. They're turning off most sane people. Bolton, though, he's a poster child for the neocon Never Trump crowd, still fantasizing about the glory days of deploying 100,000 troops for nation building in Iraq. Both left and right have rejected his interventionist worldview, yet somehow he landed the NSC job in the Trump White House. Go figure. Well, fortunate for us, President Trump was too smart to fall for all that nonsense. A blank check for any country claiming to be an ally with a hand stretched out? Not the Trump doctrine, baby. And as for Mitt, can I get a witness, Romney? Well, he's bitter, too. He still can't believe someone of his pedigree and upbringing ever lost the presidency, and that a man like Trump won it. 2012 is over, Mitt. Don't punish Trump or the rest of us for your own weakness as a candidate. Now, last night, I titled the angle 24 Hours to Victory. Love that font. Well, that title is correct, though, because Trump today triumphed over the unfair, unjust, and politically motivated witch hunt. But the Democrats cannot accept defeat. As we've told you time and again, when they lose, they call everything that happened before illegitimate. But now, even the liberal media, well, they're having a hard time spinning it.
Trump won. He's going to win this trial. He won on the issue of witnesses. He's going to get acquitted. That's how history will remember what went on here.
It's over. They lost. Trump won. Tubin even has to admit it, so let's move on. But no, that would be the gracious thing to do. Instead, the Democrats are dragging it out in a pathetic attempt to cast a pall over Trump's State of the Union address and to gratuitously ruin Super Bowl weekend for the rest of us. Oh, the Iowa caucuses? Who cares about those now? Schumer and the gang are deeply bitter, selfish, and self-aggrandizing people. They're bitter once again because Trump has beaten them at their own game. And once again, Mitch McConnell, that sly, wily old dog of the Senate, outmaneuvered all of them. And once again, some of the radicals in their party are just repelling the public and the support of key senators they needed. Senator Murkowski was so turned off by Elizabeth Warren's stunt demeaning the Chief Justice with a question last night that she rejected witnesses because of it. She wrote, "I will not stand for nor support that effort." So while Chuck and Adam tilt at windmills, President Trump, what has he done? Well, he's chalked up some fantastic victories this week. The USMCA and a bold Middle East peace plan, to name a couple. And, his administration is managing a global contagion that is threatening lives in international markets. He also signed an executive order to dismantle some of the world's worst criminal enterprises.
My administration is fighting these monsters, persecuting and prosecuting them, and locking them away for a very, very long time. We are dismantling the criminal organizations that make large-scale human trafficking possible.
But the political games are not over, not by a long shot. Now, I warned you the other night that the Democrats and the media would drop one shiny object after another and do it in front of us as an attempt to kind of drag this out as long as possible. Julie Swetnick is somewhere waiting in the wings. And right on cue, of course, the New York Times conveniently dropped another 11th hour exclusive, fed by sources who claim to have read John Bolton's unpublished manuscript.
The significance of this can't be understated. Bolton seems to implicate all of the players.
Suddenly, there is new information that involves Pat Cipollone actually being in a room where supposedly some of this happened.
It absolutely disgusts me. This is essentially the end of Clue. The butler did it in the Oval Office, you know, with a hat, you know, with a match.
Now, it's obvious to anyone with a pulse that this is nothing more than a calculated, anonymously sourced hit job. It's a last-ditch attempt to sway fence-sitting senators. But Adam Schiff wants you to believe it is gospel.
You will recall Mr. Cipollone suggesting that the House managers were concealing facts from this body. He said all the facts should come out. Well, there's a new fact which indicates that Mr. Cipollone was among those who were in the loop. Just as we predicted, and it didn't require any great act of clairvoyance, the facts will come out.
Well, never mind that the president has already issued a blanket statement saying the meeting never happened. So Schiff is going to do anything, though, to keep this hustle alive. What else does he have? Even if it means tarnishing the reputations of good men like Pat Cipollone. Now, Schiff knows he's lost, and he knows that he and all the Democrats are grasping at any claim, no matter how tenuous the string, to fake, you know, this impeachment, keep it going, keep it going, keep it going. Chuck Schumer, by the way, is already refusing to accept the results of the next election. Unless, of course, something happens between now and Wednesday, and Trump is just removed from office.
If this president is interfering in the elections may not have a fair result. Very few people doubt that he would do it again and again and again. He's already tried several times.
Wait, he's done it several times? This from a man, by the way, who supports striking Trump's name from the ballot in November while forcing major candidates in his own party off the campaign trail just days before the Iowa caucuses. And Trump is the one interfering with the elections? No, Chuck. It's you and Schiff and the entire Democrat gang who are putting your fingers on the scale for the Democrat establishment. Good luck. But the American people see right through you. And that's the angle.
See, there's a lot of psychology here and a lot of propagandizing by the Democrats. And I'll say this, the Fox Network and, you know, in the evening have been the main nexus of where uncovering and exposing what's really been going on here is happening. We had a national emergency just recently declared by our federal government on the coronavirus happening out of Wuhan that originated in Wuhan, China. And we're going to play that clip right now and then discuss it a little bit.
The other news this Friday night, the U.S. now declaring a public health emergency amid this outbreak of the coronavirus across the globe. We have now witnessed the largest spike yet in deaths in a 24-hour period since this outbreak began. New restrictions here in the U.S. Foreign nationals who pose a risk of spreading the virus will be barred from entering the country, and planes from China will now only be allowed at 7 airports in the U.S. And tonight, the 195 Americans evacuated from China and in quarantine at a military base in California have now been told they must remain there for 2 weeks. And we have just learned tonight a seventh case now confirmed here in the U.S. Here's ABC's Adrian Bankert.
Tonight, in a rare move, the U.S. declaring coronavirus a public health emergency. President Trump barring foreign nationals who pose a transmission risk from entering the country. In effect, a temporary ban on nearly all Chinese travelers, the world's most populous country. Planes from China will only be allowed to land at 7 U.S. airports starting Sunday. Americans returning from the hot zone could be subject to 14 days of quarantine. Already in isolation, 195 Americans who chartered from the epicenter of the outbreak. What was once a 3-day voluntary observation now extended to a mandatory 2 weeks at an airbase in Riverside, California. The first time in 50 years the CDC has had to issue such an order.
We were all wearing masks. We were all taking major precautions to not touch or shake hands or take the mask off our faces because, again, we weren't in the clear.
Today, officials said no one was presenting any symptoms, but the virus has a 2-week incubation period. Officials are exercising extreme caution.
We are relieved to hear this. We don't want to put anybody at risk back home, and if this is the best way to do that, then we're okay with it.
Patrick and Ping Stockstill and their two young children, the eldest just 3 years old, are all stuck on the base after visiting relatives in China.
I left my family behind. I didn't have a choice, and I feel so bad that they're still stuck in China, and I had to go.
Hundreds of Americans remain stranded in Wuhan, waiting for the government to send in another charter.
I feel a little bit trapped in Wuhan.
It's an interesting feeling. You're trapped, you're isolated.
Tonight, three major U.S. airlines and dozens of international carriers are suspending flights to China. This after the State Department issued a do not travel advisory warning against traveling to the country. Cases in China spiking with the largest jump in fatalities in a 24-hour period, 213 deaths since the outbreak began, roughly 9,700 cases confirmed. Wuhan remains on lockdown, the city a ghost town.
And Adrian Baker joins us from the military base where those families are being quarantined in California. And Adrian, we know before that action was taken that thousands actually flew to the U.S. from the region. And officials were asked about all those people today, whether or not they're being tracked in any way.
Yes, that's right, David. In fact, new information about the virus is coming to light, and officials say that we will likely see more new cases. However, officials are also stressing that the chances of contracting the virus here in America still remain very low, and they also want you to be on the lookout for symptoms like heavy coughing and fever. David?
Adrian, thank you. The coronavirus, this global outbreak, affecting the economy already. In fact, we witnessed a major sell-off on Wall Street today, the Dow falling 603 points. More than 2%. So let's get straight to our chief economics correspondent, Rebecca Jarvis, at the New York Stock Exchange tonight. Rebecca.
David, after today's declines, the Dow has completely wiped out its gains for the year. And the big question on Wall Street tonight, how long will this outbreak last and how hard might it hit? Many major U.S. companies from Apple to Nike to McDonald's and Starbucks have significant exposure to China. And as you just heard, with a number of airlines from Delta to United to American suspending those flights to China, their stocks hit hard today. The big question going forward, how much longer does it last? David?
Rebecca Jarvis on Wall Street for us. Rebecca, thank you.
What we're seeing with this virus is an incubation period. That they're, if you'll notice, they're causing quarantines up to 2 weeks. So they're saying between 2 days or up to 2 weeks, this virus exhibits a incubation period where there are no symptoms. So you could get on a plane in China or somewhere else and be infected, fly in the United States, and your symptoms may not be prevalent for up to 2 weeks. So this makes it a very dangerous virus and that it can't be vetted that quickly. So you have to institute these quarantines that are necessary. Dr. Paul Cottrell out of Harvard is saying with a series of videos on YouTube, go in there and put his name in, Dr. Paul Cottrell, and he's go in there and look up Dr. Paul Cottrell. He's an expert in this area of viruses and so forth. And he's saying that this virus is very complex and has a code that is very large. And here lately, he started off saying that it was a bat SARS-related virus a few days ago. Now he's saying there may be a component in there in the middle somewhere of an HIV component. And he's saying that HIV medicine is having a positive effect in overcoming this virus. So anyway, go in there and see what he has to say. This virus, because of its, you could say, transmittability of it or infectiousness of it without showing signs, is a very dangerous virus. We have underreporting possibly coming out of China, and China has instituted a new law that concerns people that are gossiping or putting up, you know, gossip and webcasts or web comments that are in direct conflict with the government policy and lines could possibly be imprisoned up to 7 years. And so the Chinese government is cracking down on any, you could say, gossip on the internet within China. Now, there are other sources out there. Henry Nieman at recombinomics.co, and I tried to send this address while I was in my Facebook account to another Facebook account holder over our chat channel, and it was rejected by Facebook as being in violation of community standards. Well, I've been listening to Dr. Henry Nieman for about 4 or 5 years, and he's been on top of these virus outbreaks and epidemics and so forth and pandemics better than about anyone else. So is Facebook actually excluding a site that I could transmit to someone that would give us more information than we would have strictly from governmental agencies or governmental sources? And so, I mean, here we go with this censoring thing, but they would not allow that web address to be sent over their system. We've got this impeachment now that should be resolved by next Wednesday at 4, but the Democrats and the New York Times and so forth have always exhibited these techniques of gaslighting and coming out with these new scandalous, you know what I mean, accusations and assertions. So look for something coming out between now and Wednesday that will try to blow away any kind of a final resolution of that. Otherwise, we've got the Super Bowl tomorrow. We've got Kansas City and San Francisco 49ers. They're going to be playing in Florida, Miami, Florida, and for the big Super Bowl. I think it's about 5:30, I believe, Eastern Time, or Central Time, I believe. But anyway, take that in. And then Monday we have the primary in Iowa. Next day, Tuesday, we have the State of the Union address by President Trump. And then we have, on Wednesday, we have this resolution, hopefully. The Senate will be meeting Monday and Tuesday. And then, of course, but not to interfere with the State of Union. And there seem to be questions that the senators had to take up towards the end of the session, the impeachment session on Friday, about coordinating somewhat with the security precautions. When the president comes over to Capitol Hill, there's an additional step up on security because of the presidential requirements protecting our president. So we're going to be looking at that. So we've got a really weekend here that's chock full of excitement, to say the least. I had people sometimes that come up to me and they're on the Democratic side and they say things like, "Well, George, you're a bright person and a good person. You're a Christian," and things like that. "How could you support Trump?" Well, let me tell you just for a few minutes here towards the end of this program why I support Trump. I don't like some of his personal characteristics, and I think his ego dominates him, and he's very impulsive at times in what he says, and he insults people too much. On the other side, on the positive side of the ledger for Trump, is that he's much harder worker than Barack Obama ever was in the White House, and he gets things done, and he stands out to. He started controlling this immigration thing, which was way out of control, and he got that done. He did get a couple of budget bills passed, but he sort of gave to get that done, he had to give the Democrats their programs and so forth, and he got the military expenditures and enough money in there coming in through the Department of Defense to build his walls. And so, and he's put through federal criminal reform. He's put through this human trafficking thing with Ivanka and his wife, Melania. And Melania is just a wonderful person. And my reservations, and one of the chief criticisms that I have of President Trump is that he started trying to manage the government like he would a private corporation, or like he did at Trump Incorporated. The management of the United States as the chief executive officer sitting in the Oval Office as President of the United States is a whole lot different than it is being a chief executive officer or president of a private corporation. You can will and deal a little bit more as the private president, as the president of a private corporation. When you're sitting in that Oval Office, there's a lot more to consider. And there are many laws out there that you can't step over. You can't ignore. You have to stay within a certain legal parameters to make your administration valid and right. And so I think that President Trump, he wills and deals a little bit too much outside of that. And maybe that's what happened on this talk with Zelensky, the Ukrainian president. Perhaps he went a little bit impulsively into the Biden and brought those names up. And I think any conservative or moderate senators in the Senate now, especially on the Republican side, have expressed that it was not appropriate to bring the Biden's names up in this call. But he's impulsive, and he goes out of the script. He steps out of the script, and he wills and deals and thinks he's doing the right thing sometimes. But I think he needs to be more cautious in what he has to say and where he's saying it and when he's saying it. And by all means, Mr. President, quit insulting people. That's why you lost that Romney vote on this witness thing. So anyway, I want to thank each and every one out there in our listening audience. And we've got this president. He's done some marvelous things for us. We've got to support him. We've got a good economy going. Let's just try to persuade him, cajole him, and to do the right thing about how he should treat others. But anyway, thank you for listening, and this is George Butler with The Secret Truth, signing off out of Austin, Texas, and this is, we're well over 700 programs right now, but thank you very much for listening to us and supporting us over the years. So here we go now, and good night.